Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon. And maybe it's even in the evening.
I just want to say,
yeah.
Hey, baby, your peach is fuzzy.
Welcome to another sexy-ass episode of the Knife Talk Podcast.
Jesus.
I'm Marco Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts. I'm here, as always, with Mr. Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives and Jeff Vader of Vader Knives. We're here to talk to you, answer your questions, help keep you company in the shop and on your commute, wherever you're at. And, yeah. We're just here to have a good time more than anything, and we appreciate you for joining us. You guys, what's this last week been like for you?
This Craig, is you want to kick it off? Wait a second. Hold everything. What? To the what? Audience, this is not a replacement Mareko. This is the real Mareko.
This is the real Mareko Malmasi.
This is the real one. This voice.
The real deal.
He didn't add anything. He's not putting it on.
No.
This is, what is going on with your voice?
I guess I'm getting over a cold. Last week I had a cold. But it was nothing crazy. It was just congestion and a sore throat. And now this is what I sound like.
Wow. What if that was forever?
I wouldn't be mad.
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
The wind changed and you're just stuck. Yeah.
Can you imagine? You in a car with a little road rage. Fucking go! I want to summon hell!
You motherfucker!
Yeah, you sound like you're about to summon hell. You know? It's a fucking thick ass voice right there. Right.
I'm not mad about it.
All right.
So I guess I'll kick it off, though.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this last week's been good. It's been this last week is sharpening week for me. So I offer a sharpening service in my local area. And so it was good to just take a break from the normal knife making to mix it up with the sharpening. And what else? Oh, I went and saw a metal show this week. One of my local bands called C Average. They're fucking good. And I don't know. It's been cool to see live music a lot, or a little bit more lately. And these guys are kind of a mix of like stoner rock and metal, or math rock. I don't know if you guys...
What's math rock?
Meth. Meth rock.
Math. No, it's math.
Oh, right. Okay.
It is
okay.
Math rock. Math rock is more kind of like a lot of arpeggiated kind of... music or rock, but it's like with a thick, crunchy, kind of distorted tone to it. I don't know, it's really nice. I like it a lot. The band
so
is called
like
C Average.
Two plus two is four. Not like
no,
that, right?
No.
That's what I would think. That's immediately when you said
math rock.
Just like,
yeah. Like Sesame Street.
Yeah, Cookie Monster. they got a song called Orcs versus Elves. It's actually on Spotify. The band is called C Average and they're fucking good. That's one of my most favorite songs. Anyways, other than that, I just had a good day hanging out with the dude yesterday. We did some mushroom hunting, watched some fun movies. We just watched the Buzz Lightyear movie, which Jeff is out of those times, but maybe Craig's seen it. It was actually really funny.
Oh yes.
It was very good. I was surprised. I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot.
Scaring the kids in the cinema.
It's like fucking the monsters. It's like the father from the monsters. Kid jumps up. Jesus Christ, Dad, what's going on with you? Oh, it's funny.
I wish I knew some Jabba the Hutt lines from Star Wars.
They're fine.
Anyways. No, that's it. That's what the week's been like for me, and it's, yeah. It's all right.
Cool.
Craig, cool. What's going on?
I'm back again in the UK, over here for a whole month. I didn't realize that we were recording so early this morning. So I had this message 10 minutes ago. Are you ready? And I'm like, shit, no. So I'm running on battery power from a boatyard overlooking the sea. Yeah, it's lovely, but it's, yeah, I'm running on battery power. So I'm on a wing and a prayer at the moment.
All right.
Yeah, it's been a good week. I travelled back. What day did I travel back? Ooh, Wednesday, Thursday. I took 2 days to travel back rather than just over in one big hit. And I've been in London for a couple of days and I arrived back in Wales late last night and bought a new boat this morning. And yeah, it's been a crazy week. Another mad one, yes. But good. All good.
You're a very industrious guy. Adventurous.
You got a fleet going?
No, I sold a boat and then I bought another boat very quickly.
I got you.
Yeah, so the boat that we bought at the beginning of the summer, I've already sold that one. Made a little bit of money, so invested in a bigger boat. So that's where
you're
I am.
You're a flipper.
That's where I am.
Flipper. All you do. You're a flipper. All you do is flip stuff. Buy and flip.
International yacht trader, I think, is going to be my my LinkedIn bio.
I think you should be international flipper. You know,
yeah,
that's all you do. Yeah. You flip stuff everywhere.
I'm flipping something to you now, I can tell you.
I bet you are. I bet you're in your hammock on the bottom of the boat. You're flipping off. I know all about it.
No, this view, this photo he sent us, it looks like he's got two floors in this damn thing.
I think he's on a
crane. Actually, I'm on a crane.
Oh, you're on a crane.
I'm 20 foot up in the air.
Are you even allowed
I wasn't expecting we were podcasting. So I'm on the boat doing some tidying and just checking things out. And he was like, oh, shit. So I had my laptop with me. So I was like, we're fine. We can do this. So, but I am 20 foot up in the air.
This is unbelievable.
I see. So you're dry docked right now. Are you cleaning up?
Exactly.
The bottom of the boat?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, lots needs to be done. Yes. Yeah. Lots of work needs to be done. So before it goes back in. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Jeffrey, what's happening?
It was a long, long week. I'm tired, very tired. Good news was my friend Christian Petroni's new cookbook came out, and the cool thing was he told me a couple months ago that the fork we made is going to be on the cover. So the book launched, and bubblegum lift ticket forks on the cover, and that was really exciting. He sent me a nice message, and it's that was really kind of neat. Been going all over the place.
Oh, wow. Well, my spoons have the center spread.
I know. Yeah, you and your spoons have the center spread. It was cool. It was, you can see the handle, and it's like kind of nice pop of blue on the red cover. It was really kind of cool. Cliff Dufton got married on Thursday, our friend Cliff Dufton, CJ Dufton. And nice. He had asked me if I would cook for the rehearsal dinner night. So I said, yeah, yes. He wanted me to make paella. So I cooked paella for like 50 people, which was wild.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And then John Ariani was there, who's recently back to listening to the Knife Talk, by the way, guys. He's back, baby. John Ariani's back, Sunset Forge. So we had a good time. And then my business partner, Tony, came and he helped me cook. And it was a strange event because it was at a winery that I knew because, you know, I've said before, my father's a winemaker in the area. And I was talking to the winemaker and I said that I'm Ben Fader's son. And it was as if a ghost had walked in. His face dropped and he got real uncomfortable talking, you know, he was like,
oh wow.
Yeah, it was really wild. It was like a very, actually quite unearthly. And then one of his main guys said that my dad gave him his first job. So there was like, they were just like looking at me and yeah, it was kind of eerie, but the eeriest part was it turned out that day was the anniversary of my father's death. So it was like intense. Holy so I was shit. Cooking for all these people, we had a good time. And then, but then the winemaker came out, this old guy came out and he just wanted to talk to me about my dad. And it was weird. It was really weird, frankly. Kind of took a lot out of me, but in a positive way, in a weird way.
Freak you out, things like that.
I knew, you know, the weather was weird, so they changed events. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I know this winery. You know, growing up, we used to go there, and we were friendly with the winemaker. And then when they introduced me, I mean, I didn't know these people. Last time I saw them was, like, you know, 20 years ago. And then when they introduced me, the guy's eyes dropped and his jaw dropped. And it was really kind of, I can only explain it like as if a ghost had walked in the room. They were
Do
really
you look
kind
like
of
your
like,
dad?
Apparently. Yeah, I look like a young version of my dad. So, yeah. Like, there are pictures from him from when he was in World War II, and we're, like, spitting images. So, you know, the whole thing was pretty... I mean, it was intense, and then I got home, and I was telling Hillary, she's like, you know, your dad died today, like, however many, 15 years ago or something like that. Yeah. And then I got 5 weeks left of the New York City Marathon, and I ran 18 miles yesterday, and I'm dead. But I feel pretty good. I feel good enough. Actually, next weekend I'm going to the Center for Mental Arts to teach a class, and the week after that I'm going to be at Maker Camp. So there's a couple long runs I'm going to miss. But after yesterday, 18 miles, I said to myself, do I feel like I could do another eight? And I definitely felt like I could do another eight. So I'm only going to miss two long runs, but at the same time I'm running like a lot. I'm putting in about 38 miles a week. This week was like 31 miles. So. I'm getting ready for that, and then this coming week, I have Monday. I'm going to have this kind of interesting thing. I'm doing a prototype. We got contracted to do prototyping for this guy who's starting a company, and yeah. I finished two examples of what he had drawn up, and it was cool. And he's coming up on Monday, and then Friday afternoon, I thought, maybe I should sharpen one, and I realized that there is a monumental design flaw that doesn't allow you to sharpen them all the way to the end because of the way the plunge line is and the way the termination point is, and you just can't get all the way to the end. So we're gonna have a come to Jesus moment on Monday where there's like, you know, I know, look, you know, form is not, can't supersede function. So, or is that right? For function's got to come before form, so we got to be able to sharpen these goddamn things. Otherwise everything's good. I'm gonna try to relax today. The last day of Major League the regular season of baseball today, and that'll be fun. And
Do you watch football? Is there a football game?
You know what?
Today?
You know what? I don't. I followed football a couple years ago, and I still don't truly get it. Like, if I watched a play, I would just, it's like an explosion of humanity that I can't really understand what the hell's going on. So, like, really? I don't really get it. And then the New York teams are terrible. But October baseball is the best. And then Knicks are starting up next week, so I'm going to just not follow football this year. I might watch the playoffs, but I don't think, it doesn't really interest me. Like, it's all gambling now. So it's like, I don't really have any, people talk about it, like, it's just about the gambling part. So
you're
not really
a Jets guy then?
I mean, I root for New York teams, but I mean, if they suck, what's the point of watching? I mean, they're 0-3.
They need your love, man.
They don't need my love. They need to fucking play better. You know? I mean, that's how this thing works. It's like, there's nothing to do with me. Thank God. But I don't get it. Like I said, it's an explosion of humanity that I can't follow. So.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Now, listen, before we go, we have a lot to get to. And I know that Craig's battery is about to fucking croak. We have a lot of feedback in regards to last week. It was I listened back to it. It was a great episode in terms of, you know, what Mareko's going through. There was a lot of mostly positive remarks. There's one guy who, we could talk about him if you want, but it's not a big deal. And we got a lot to get to. So, at your leisure.
Let's not even give him the airspace.
Well, okay. Fine. I mean,
I think if you're talking about the guy that's saying I'm not gaslighting, but gatekeeping, I think that's worth talking about.
Okay, but, if you're happy to, okay. Yeah.
Well, okay. There's more to it.
There's a funny.
I mean, most of the people who talked about last week were actually quite interesting. We got some good feedback about it. There's one guy. The thing is the one guy's not really locked into the show. Like, I've never, you know, I constantly, when we send out for questions or feedback or whatever, you know, our regular listeners, I recognize all the names. Yeah. So this was a guy I had never seen before, and he wrote something on the page, you know, I'm not going to even repeat, it's not even worth repeating, but he basically said that, you know, this, you know, gatekeeping talk was gross. Now, the funny part is the irony and the, you know, whatever. I sent it to Mareko and Craig and, you know, they were, you know, whatever. The funny part is the guy's profile picture is just a close-up of a face with a finger up his nose. And the iron, it's like, it should have been, so he was saying that the episode was gross, but his profile is gross, far more repellent. Yeah. And gross. Yeah. So, and the guy's not locked in. He doesn't write, you know, if you want to write something, fine. I'm, you know, we said what we said, and, you know, but I don't know. It's hilarious when somebody is just so, maybe it was a joke. Maybe it was a joke because he's, you know, finger up his nose.
Could have been. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Wow. My feeling about the whole idea of it being gatekeeping is like, I guess, in a way, like, as a creative person coming up with ideas and innovating on processes and putting stuff out into the world, like, people can figure it out. And that's not what I'm annoyed about. What I'm annoyed about is somebody taking something that is my concept and freely distributing it into the world without discussing it with me. Again, I'm connected to the guy. It would be different if I'm not connected to them, or I was fucking dead, or and he was getting inspiration from something from fucking a long time ago or something like that. But I'm here. I'm connected to the guy, and he's freely distributing a well-produced tutorial on my process, and didn't even bother to talk to me. And it feels very intentional, especially the way he turned around and followed it up with a post that looks like a knife that's exactly like mine. And again, totally. Without attribution. And I'm just like, okay, like at a point, it's not accidental. You could say, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, yeah. Once, but then this is like, I don't know.
I felt like listening back to last week's episode, I was listening back to it and I found you to be very honest. And I felt you to be very vulnerable. And I felt that it was great audio, by the way. It was great. Like, that's the kind of, you know, I'm like, even when we were talking about it at the time, I was thinking, this is some good shit right here. So my opinion was I thought that your honesty and your ability to be vulnerable in a situation like that, I thought was very, very honest and good. Did you get any? We got a lot of feedback. We got a lot of messages. Did you get any messages or feedback?
Yeah, I got some messages directly especially from friends or people that I'm connected with. You know, I got a message from our friend Joshua Prince, and it was just good to hear some kind of encouragement to that, especially around the idea that, you know, you're doing good work and you are. A very creative person. You always come up with new ideas. Steve Schwarzer was also very supportive. It's just, you know, it feels frustrating and almost kind of violating in a way. Huh. But again, there's only so much you can really do except for just continue to move on and come up with new stuff and hopefully, you know, inspire people in a meaningful way. But hopefully not see too much of people just like straight ripping you off and basically almost kind of presenting an idea as their own. Or no, I guess he didn't even do that, I guess, to be fair. He was a
vague. Who's vague?
Well, he didn't fucking ask for permission. That's the biggest thing. He didn't ask or reach out to me at any point in regards to distributing content, detailing the process of making something that I haven't already made and shared. And that's the other thing that's hilarious about the whole gatekeeping thing is like, I'm the last person who's been a fucking gatekeeper.
Yeah.
to turn around and tell me I'm gatekeeping. I'm just like the stuff I've shared has, not to toot my horn, but like has really helped a lot of makers, like the coffee process, a lot of the Damascus etching stuff, the S grinding stuff, like chef's knife design stuff, like a lot of it has been impactful.
And I remember a number of years ago, sorry for interrupting, but I remember a number of years ago, you had said that all kind of the old guard were getting mad at you because you were giving away a lot of information.
Yeah. Well, and that what was hilarious, it was my own shit, my own design. And I think what they were seeing is like, oh no, this guy's doing some cool stuff and he's just teaching people how to do it rather than keep it hidden to himself. And I think from their perspective, some of them at least, you know, I think some of those people are very limited in regards to their creativity in making Damascus patterns. And what they make is based off, like, it's like a recipe book. And you can bake or cook directly from a recipe, but outside of that, maybe you don't really understand how flavors come together or how to combine different techniques or ingredients to achieve different unique and interesting results, where I'm just like nonstop coming up with new shit. And
listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And so from their perspective, or some people's perspective, they're like, oh no, he's going to give all this shit away and then people are going to copy it and then he's not going to be the only one to do it. But I have books full of stuff that I haven't even made yet. So that's where I'm trying to focus on, just being like, you know what, what can I actually do? I can't really actually do anything. Hopefully, if anything, it can just be like a lesson for folks. In regards to navigating this, or just like how to be fucking professional and respectful to other makers. Because again, at the same time, there's no need for him to not reach out to me, or there's no need for people to not, attribute, not that he did this, but not to attribute inspiration to other makers. It's like when people do that, they're acting like, oh, I invented knives. And it's like, get the fuck out of here. Knives have been around since humans were fucking breathing air, basically. So, or some sort of cutting tool has been around. So fucking get over yourself and just be respectful to each other.
I would say this in regards to, we got a lot of feedback. I figured we could just go right into the feedback. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. But in regards to the guy who was kind of like slightly negative and, relatively, I'm appreciative of the fact that he interacted with the show. I think if you want to write something and send it in, DM us at Knife Talk Podcast. And I would definitely, I think that, everybody's opinion is valid. There's no reason to, say one guy's right and one guy's wrong. I mean, this is a kind of a delicate topic and people get, they listen and they say something. So with that said, if you want to engage in the show,
you try to bring that voice down.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to, compared to you, all of a sudden, hey, baby, if you want to get that, hey, baby, your peach is fuzzy. If y'all want to get that voice, then I was going to say punch myself in the balls, but I don't think that's going
to give me
That's going to give me the opposite. Yeah. That maybe you should punch yourself in the balls and then maybe your voice will get a little bit better. So guys, if you want to interact with the show, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And that's where you can send us your DMs. And then here's some listener feedback in regards to last week. Paul Jansen, GSL, Gold Star listener, he boys locked in, says, I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for Mareko having that guy rip off his work. People like that not only directly screw the people they ripped off, but also the beginners trying to learn from people with more experience. If every time a master shares info, they get screwed. They'll quit sharing it info, and then it becomes harder to learn, and the tips and techniques die with the individual that develops them.
Good point. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that the funny thing is this happens in almost every category of occupation or career or hobby. People just lift people's stuff all the time, and it's just like you just gonna have to understand it. And it's just one of those things that, like I said last week, go to a restaurant, so everybody's putting birria tacos on the menu. It's just like, what's going on here? You make hamburgers. Why are you making birria tacos? Speedster Stove says, greeting knife dudes, about people copying your stuff, not knife related, but in my other endeavors, I confronted someone who copied one of my designs. His rationale was he didn't deny copying. He said, well, it's such a simple idea, anyone could have come up with it. Well, someone fucking did. It was me, you wanker.
Yeah.
And I've had that situation too, where I know that the coffee scoop craze in the maker community a couple years ago, like, lifted off into this, weird nebulous of all of a sudden everyone needs, like, these fucking coffee scoops of all things. It's just the craziest thing. And I know that there were, you could point to a number of years ago, you could point to a couple guys who had really kind of, you know, planted the flag on this design. And then I remember hearing other guys are making it, and then somebody, you know, said something to him, and that same basically said the same thing, which was just like, well, it's so easy, anyone could have figured it out. You know, Jade Curtis says, hot take, learning isn't free, either pay an instructor or pay through material lost.
Sure.
And then we have an audio. Now, we have an audio one, but it's I would refer to this as LCA Knifeworks is our guy. He is locked in. But he gave us the audio Magna Carta. Okay? So, you know, we're going to listen to the audio. I listened to it twice. It's worth playing.
Okay.
This is our guy, LCA Knifeworks, and he is...
Wait, let me get a note. Pad and pen.
Well, you know, just this is the audio Magna Carta. LCA Knifeworks is our guy. We're with him, and here we go.
Hey, y'all. It's Lee with LCA Knifeworks. So, Mareko, I am completely 100% with you, bud. From time to time, I make stabilized wasp nest knife handles. Go out, harvest a wasp nest, stabilize it, slap it on a knife.
He's saying a wasp nest. He stabilizes wasp nest. That sounds like
there's a real buzz about them at the moment.
And you fucking start laughing at this accent, Craig. I know you. Don't start.
I'm not laughing at the accent.
Well,
no.
I post a knife one day, and a fairly well-known knife maker reaches out to me and says, hey, how'd you do that? Well, I oblige him. I tell him how to do it. Fast forward a couple weeks, and this is all he posts. Stabilized wasp nest knife handles. And I'm sitting here thinking, huh, I might not oughta told that. He didn't give me a mention, you know, didn't say, hey, LCA Knifeworks showed me how to do this. Well, to add insult to injury, I get at least one message, if not two, a week from potential customers, from family, from friends. Hey, ain't this cool? Look what he made. I wish you could make a knife handle like that. And I'm sitting here drumming up my old posts saying, I've done it. I taught that sapsucker how to do it.
Sapsucker.
And he has cornered this market of something that was really cool that you can't patent it, but something that was it's really cool and sold. I understand now why the old heads gatekeeped on certain things. It's not like you're teaching somebody how to grind a certain bevel or how to get a distal taper fresh off the grinder, or you know, they only make so many size contact wheels. They only make, you know, certain grit belts and different finishes and such. There's not a knife that's ever been made that hadn't been made before.
We're rounding third, guys.
But niche stuff like that, you've got to kind of clutch your pearls close to your chest on that. If you want to keep it yours. So, Mareko, I understand that you're mattering a hornet's nest right now, but going forward, gatekeep a little bit. It's not something that's common knowledge. Make sure your maker's mark's on it, or at least get some money from it. Anyway, y'all, keep grinding. Y'all have a good one.
There you go.
Sweet. Thank you, LCA.
LCA Knifeworks.
The most relaxed call we've ever had. He was, you know, he was taking his time. You can imagine sitting back and considering what he's going to say next. And yeah. But no, totally true what you're saying.
He wrote, please excuse my Moses complex. He's the man.
Moses complex.
Locked in, dude. Hey, no, LCA is knocked in, locked in.
Oh, I appreciate it. But, yeah, I think something I want to, I feel like I didn't do a good job of last week in making clear is that this was something that I was looking to share in the future, just like many things that I've shared about my process. It's just that control over that intellectual process or that intellectual property of that around that process was taken out of my hands. And that's what's been really frustrating. It's not even attributing, I mean, it's good to ideally to get inspiration and influence attributed. But it was a process that I developed and have used and teach. It's part of the way I earn a living, was taken and distributed without my consent, basically. Even though it was something I had the long-term plan was to share it. The big thing is that it was mine to share and not other people's. And it was taken that, like he's saying about the honeycomb or whatever, the wasp nest
handles.
Yeah. That was kind of it was his idea and it was put out in the world. And yeah, it was just, it's frustrating.
I remember years ago there was a guy who was doing this technique, and I won't even describe the technique. And it looked great, and I sent him a message saying, "How did you do that?" And he goes, "Family secret." And I remember reading that, being like, "Well, fuck this guy." Mm. It took me a long time to kind of get it, you know. And I think that people who don't get it haven't really put something into a process and then have it just kind of like taken from them, you know? And I think that that's the hurt, is this kind of feeling of you spent time, you spent energy, you put in the money, you put in the time, you made the mistakes, you've kind of dinged it out, and then somebody just kind of just takes it from you. And that's a very, very frustrating part, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Right. He created the buzz around those wasp handles, definitely. Okay.
That was a good one. Good one.
I have to say it twice, but it landed.
I know the first one was good. That's what the buzz is about.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff, tell me about your grinder. Go.
Guys, you got to get a Broadbeck Ironworks grinder. Go to broadbeckironworks.com. Get yourself one of them great grinders. We love them. We just had a message from one of our listeners. One of our listeners who just got one. His name is our man MRC Customs. Got himself a new grinder and got himself a Broadbeck. And he used the promo code KNIFETALK10, and he's thrilled. So definitely go get yourself a grinder and blah blah blah. I'm with you.
What's that background noise?
I was looking at his. I have to turn my volume up and turn my volume down, and then I was looking for the guy's name, and his thing came up. So,
no worries.
Why don't we get into the show? Do some questions.
Should we do some questions? Let's do it. Okay. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got any questions for us, DM or send your audio messages to us. And we've got an anonymous one to start with.
Whoa.
And it's a simple one. 4 words. How to prevent burnout.
And this is someone that we all know. It's a big mocker. Okay. It's a big mocker.
True.
Big mocker.
Okay.
Big
so mocker. How do you prevent burnout? Mareko, what about you?
Yeah. Over the years, I've definitely experienced a lot of burnout. I've been making knives for about 15 years now altogether. And I think one of for me, what's been difficult is kind of getting to this point where I'm just making the same thing over and over and over again. And as a creative person, it is very difficult for me. and so I found ways to mix it up. I have a lot of different irons in the fire, and it's so that if I get just burned out or frustrated with one thing I'm working on, I can pivot and go work on another project that I got going on. And so, you know, I have the Patreon, which is the community over there has been really great to spend time with and to help coach and work with and build and get to know those people over there. I have my Straightforward Knife Making. I'm starting to do more video content. I offer a knife sharpening service. I teach classes, as in private lessons, and so just mixing it up really for me has been a great way to, to help prevent burnout. I also have like a ton of tiny little like side projects going on. Like, I have a buddy's old Puko knife. It's like a leather stacked handle that needs work on it. I have a bunch of little ideas and concepts of my own that are like funky little things on the side that I'm going to start playing with and doing more work with. And it's just, it's for a, yeah, for an ADHD brain like mine, I really need a lot of variety. And I still know that, like, I got shit I gotta get done. It's just, there are some points where I just, like, it is less productive for me to stay on task than to go spend a couple hours on something else and then come back. It's less productive. Because it's just the way my fucking brain works. Because if you try to just shove my, like shoving a dog's nose down to the fucking food and say, eat, motherfucker.
What?
It doesn't, have you? I'm not saying I do it.
That's an analogy for you. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
You can't, it's or like the horse of water situation. It's like you can, I struggle with that.
Wait. So you have a hard time staying on one thing is what you're saying.
Yes, for okay. sure.
Because I thought you said you do better when you, I don't know. I was confused.
Oh yeah. When I have a lot of different stuff going on.
Oh, that, so that's good. The lot of different stuff is good, is better.
Better. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Craig, what do you think?
I'm very much the same. Variety is the spice of life. I've always got a million and one projects on the go. But saying that, that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, feel it. And I think burnout can mean different things to different people. I mean, I've talked about this in the past. Well, my wife and I, we'll quite often we'll have, you know, we just call it like, you know, like a mental health day where we just do what the hell, if we want to stay in bed, that's fine, you know, and we're both aware of that, and we let each other do that, you know. Well, I'll take over the kids all day today, you just relax, whatever it is. And I think it's just about knowing those sort of signs of when you're just feeling it, the world's a bit too much, you know. So yeah, just being aware of it. I mean, we can't talk on this as if we're experts on this, obviously, but I'm just saying, you know, what works for me. But the main thing is just variety. If something is getting to me, there's always something else that I can be doing. And that can cause its own problems, because then all of a sudden you've got 30 projects that need doing, not just the one. But yeah, and just not being scared to sort of step away from things for a little bit and just go, hey, you know, I just need to sit in my pants and eat chicken all day. You know, I've done that many a time. Whoa. And the next day the world seems a lot brighter.
Was the your what? The chicken in your
his
pants?
Underwear. That's what he's. His
no,
underwear.
I know. Yeah. I know. He's sitting in his underwear eating chicken all day.
Quite regularly, yeah. That quite regularly, great. Yes.
Like what kind of chicken? Like chicken nuggets? So you got a bucket or chicken or what? What's going on?
Oh, a bucket, chicken. Like deep fried chicken. Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, the whole bucket. You wearing a shirt?
The whole bucket. Occasionally, not always. Not always wearing pants. I'll socks? Be honest with you.
Socks or no socks? Glasses on, glasses off. You put a tarp like the day down on the couch.
Like the day I was born, you know.
Yeah. You put a tarp down on the couch.
A tarp down, like Dexter.
You can't be having, like, you know. You can't. The next day, you can't be like sitting on them. Chicken crumbs, you know what I'm saying?
But what I'm saying is, don't be scared to just do something completely for yourself.
Yeah.
And you will find that you will be sort of reinvigorated afterwards, because you get bored pretty quickly of doing nothing. So yeah.
get yourself butt ass naked with a bucket of chicken and sit on the couch, shake your glasses off.
That's the way forward. I'm telling you.
That's the way forward.
I prescribe it to every one of our listeners.
I think that would be the best if you just had to take your. You just decided, well, not only do I have to, I'm going to be in my underwear eating chicken, but I don't want to see anything. I want to be like in like some sort of.
Believe me, that is the truth.
some sort of sensory deprivation chicken tank. You know, you get your glasses off, can't see a shit, but you can reach down, tank. You can feel the chicken get to your mouth.
Right, let's just call this one. Let me just.
I can see him wearing like a pair of.
Deprivation chicken tank.
That's it. I mean,
he's wearing meta goggles.
Oh, dude. No, he doesn't want to see any of it.
The fried chicken.
He just wants to know the chicken's heading towards his face. So it's a conversation between his fingers and his mouth. I appreciate that. I'm with you, dude. Locked, that's called being locked in. Locked in Lockwood.
That's the title right there. conversation between his fingers and his mouth.
Yeah. Well, I've got sensory deprivation chicken tank written down at the moment.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
My opinion is different. My opinion is different, and it's based on different things. I mean, we're all different people, so we have different motivations. Part of my motivation comes from spite. I was told that as a younger person, I couldn't do the things that I really dreamed of doing. And I was really kind of, there was a lot of doubt. And I'm like, fuck you. You can't tell me what I can and can't do. To the point where, my doctor said I can't be doing the marathon. And I'm on my second marathon at 51. And I'm feeling great. And I'm going to, can't tell me I can't do it. And part of that is how do you recognize how to get your destination? And I know that the times that I'm organized and disciplined, I can get as close as to where I want to be, and that's the only way I can do it. I try to see the big picture as opposed to the daily picture, and I try to look towards not only, the month ahead or to a year ahead, and then I need to just kind of lock in and just know that some days it's just not going to be fun. And like marathon yesterday, I'm running 18 miles. You got to figure out a way to mentally get yourself there. If you're just like, oh God, I just don't want to do this anymore, you let yourself off the hook. But I mean, once you get to the finish line and you figure out a way to kind of get you across the finish line, and you feel good. It's awesome. It's an awesome feeling. But I would say that for me, it's more along the lines of I do things out of spite because I was told that I couldn't do things when I was younger. And it's just like I believed it in the beginning.
It drives you on a bit more.
I believed it in the beginning. When I was like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You just, my dad would say things to me that were, were crippling to my confidence. And then I would believe it. If I couldn't do something, I'd believe it. And now it's just like, fuck you. Of course I can do it. What's the mechanism to get it across? And then I focus on that mechanism that's going to get me across the finish line. And then, even if it's a day, there were days where when we were at Center for Metal Arts, we were just popping holes in channel to make railings. I'm sitting on the goddamn ironworker or a drill press all goddamn day long. And I'm just drilling pre-punched hole. I mean, like a center punched hole. I'm just drilling the holes. And it's all goddamn day. And you're just like, you have to figure out a way. Well, how can I make sure that I get this done quicker? I have to beat yesterday's, how many channels did I do yesterday? I got to do more this year, today. And how am I going to get there? I have to just kind of mentally psych myself up to do this shit. Otherwise, you show up and you don't have a game plan. And it really affects you mentally.
I also think lately I've started to realize I think my burnout is a result of doing something that is, for me, a very deep creative expression of myself. Versus if I had a job
totally,
drilling fucking holes, I could do that all day. Or if I was working in a warehouse, like I've done these jobs in the past. I've had no problem, no matter if I'm having a good day or a bad day. Like, I could get in there and not think too hard and just fucking get the job done. Obviously, you got to be safe. But when it's
the mentally taxing stuff.
It's all mentally taxing. That's what burns me the fuck out.
It's the hardest part is if you're working for someone, it's way easier to show up, do the job, and fucking leave. Yeah. The clock hits, whatever, you leave, and you don't have any bearing on the outcome. Because you came in, you did your job, you maybe talked to someone, but you focused because you don't own any of the responsibility of the ownership of the business. You don't give a fuck. Yeah. You're paid by the hour. You show up, you do your thing, whatever. And you're paid regardless. And if something's wrong, you still get your paycheck unless you get fired or one of those things. But when you own a business or you're responsible for the end of the day, there's a lot more pressure on you because at the end of the day, the buck stops with you.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, I've had this conversation with people who work for me in the past, and I would say, well, look, listen, you don't have to be responsible for certain things, but at the end of the day, your check comes through, right? And I'm like, and when it comes to it, it's up to me. I'm the last line of defense to see if this company is going to work or not. So I think that you have to also delineate the fact that when you're working for someone, you don't have to care. You do your job. You give a B, you give like a C plus B, job. What?
just because it's not mine doesn't mean I'm doing a shitty job. It's just
no, but there, I mean,
there's
you don't
a difference.
Feel, but you don't
like
own the
saying,
you don't own the responsibility.
The owner,
but
yeah,
a lot of times you don't. You most likely won't. I'm not saying you. I'm saying one might not necessarily feel the obligation to understand the inner workings of a business.
Sure.
So it's easy to kind of, you know, to just kind of like go in, and then I see people all the time and they just go do their job, and you weigh out, is this person, you know, positive or negative? You know, is it worth it to have them there? Are the pros outweighing the cons? And it's usually, you know, this day and age, it doesn't really, it's not the end of the world. You don't have to have the greatest employee in the world, but they don't care as much as the person who owns the company and wants to do well. Well, so yeah, it's harder. What I'm saying is it's harder for you because you own your company.
Yeah.
And then you care more.
For sure. And you honestly, you should. You should be the one that cares the most about your own
business.
Yes,
of course.
Business.
That's how business should be.
I think I've had employers in the past who feel that I have a responsibility to care as much as they do, if not more. And in my mind, I'm like, upon reflection now, I'm like, it's your fucking business. It is not my responsibility whether this business succeeds or fails. It ultimately falls on you, but they're up my ass as an employee. Like, I should care. Like, I get the payouts and make the majority of the profits or whatever at the end of the day. Which, so like, there are some businesses who are barely skating by. But I think those were employers who were the hardest, were the ones who were struggling. But at the same time, it's like they're putting it on me, and the reality is like it shouldn't be on me.
Except for the fact that at the end of the day, I mean, you have expectations. You know, you figure out what the expectations are between the employer and the employee. And if the person doesn't come in and give a shit, you cut them loose. You know, that's easy. That's easy stuff. But it's
what
like
if they're doing a good job, but they don't.
How do you know?
Shit.
I mean, then you make that decision. You make that decision. It's the pros outweigh the cons. But at the same time, attitude is something that you can deal with. You have to deal with. Yeah. You know, and you know, yes, you're right. It's the employee is not responsible for. Oh, that's what I'm saying. You can go in, you can do your job, and you know, it doesn't matter. You don't give a shit because it's like, you know, it's not your company. People, I've seen that shit from day one. Like I said last week, my dad had a small business, and he had guys who come in. They come in drunk, and he had to make a decision. Like, can they do their job drunk? You know. And then he just got to the point where he was just like, no. So you got to cut them loose. And the guy did a great job, but he just came in drunk. You know. And you know, I've been, you know, with Center for Mental Arts. They used to have an old guy. He used to come in drunk, and then they had to make a decision: is he good enough? He obviously doesn't give a shit. He's got his own problems. But I mean, where are we going? You know, and cut him loose too.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know why this conversation kind of went this way, but I mean, you know, you have to as the owner of a company, you have, if you want to succeed, you have to figure out ways in which to do it, and you have to be a little bit more thinking long distance in regards to the direction that you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And that cuts loose burnout because you're just like, you're focused.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Look, Evenheat, if you need your own heat treating facility in your own shop, you can do it easily. Evenheat-kiln.com. Head on over to Evenheat. They make the best. We've all got them. Whatever your budget, whatever size you're looking for, they'll do it all. Head on over to Evenheat-kiln.com. We're only one question in here. Who's going to take the next?
We have an audio question.
Yeah.
This is from Ben from EDC Gearhouse. He sent it into Knife Talk.
Gentlemen, good morning. Whoa. This is Ben / EDC Gearhouse on Instagram. I had a question for you fellas. Currently, we sharpen like 50, 60 knives a week on the Wicked Edge, and it's super easy, super efficient, and all that stuff. But the problem is, I don't think it's respectable. I want to learn how to sharpen on a 2x72. And was just wondering if you guys can give me some pointers or let me know about a jig or some easier ways or maybe a video online that's a solid intro to that. Thanks for everything you do. Cheers, guys.
What's did he say he didn't think it respectable, did he say?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Well, I think that, you know, people, you know, those kind of ones where you're it looks like you're, it's kind of like you're rowing a boat. You know, you have two oars and you're going back and forth. Like,
I know the ones. Yeah.
Done it by hand. And I think that people don't.
Oh yeah. That you clamp to like the tabletop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, if you're doing 60 a week anyway, you're probably doing far more than any of us. And I think that whole, you know, is it respectable? I think if it gets the job done, it gets the job done. And that's the main thing. It's the outcome that people really are considering. Do it on 2x72. I never have. And I know certainly a lot of people do. Never have, just because that you've got that. It's easy to fuck up, put it that way. You know, you've got a belt traveling quickly. It can generate a lot of heat. You'd really want to do it with a new belt, but then if you're doing it with a new belt, whether it was a ceramic or something, you're just destroying them and stuff. So, I mean, it's almost as if you've written this in for us. But personally, I'd use a Tormek. And Jeff, do you want to tell them why?
Well,
you've got about nine of the bad boys.
I'll tell you about Tormek, but I also have an opinion on this situation. Tormek's great. I got a Tormek because I was talking to Tomer Botner has that three, and then Jonathan Porter, Doghouse, two guys I really respected were using them, and I was really respecting them, and it took me a little bit of time to get used to it, and then I put it away for a while, and then I really spent time working with it, and it's the only way I sharpen it. It actually has made me a better sharpener. There's a water-cooled system, and if you go to tormek.com, you can check it out, or you go to follow them on tormek_sharpening on Instagram. I used to do the belts, and one of the things I noticed was, especially because if you use a J-Flex belt with a flat platen, you're gonna get some chatter. You're not getting it smooth enough, in my opinion, because of the seam of the belt. So you use a little bit of slack, and what I noticed was it was fast to get the burr. And you can get that long burr, which is kind of, you know, not nice. But what also happens is, especially with those J-Flex belts, based on how you're holding the knife, especially if it's a long knife. Now, EDC Gearhouse, you're doing mostly small knives, which I would be really kind of concerned about using the belt, because when you're holding the knife against the, it takes a lot of practice, I would think, and maybe I was doing it wrong, but I ended up taking a lot more material off the heel, and then I started to notice that the profile of the knives were changing because I was taking too much off the heel based on how I was holding it. And I found that to be something that I really didn't want anymore. I was taking off too much material too quickly, and I was making these minor changes that really affected me. So I stopped because I didn't think I could. I was doing it for years, and I didn't think that I would, every so often I'd get one wrong, and I was like, maybe it's me, or maybe it's the machine, or maybe it's most likely my fault. So I kind of went back to the Tormek. So I don't really suggest. I mean, practice, but if you're sharpening someone else's knife and you make a mistake, you gotta
tell
them.
Those are the best knives to practice with.
Other people's knives that they pay for? Oh, yeah.
I would say, I actually do. So I was just talking about how I was sharpening this last week. I actually do my sharpening on my 2x72, but it took me a long time to get comfortable with it because when I first started out sharpening, I would basically run the knife perpendicular to the direction of the belt. So, you know, I would have an 8 to 10 inch chef's knife that I'm sharpening on a 2 inch wide surface. And like you were saying, Jeff, like it's easy to accidentally, you know, wash out the heel or accidentally undercut the belly and get some sort of funky little recurve dip in there. And I really was struggling with it. And so then I was doing all stones all the time. And that, you know, it got the job done, but fuck, it took a lot of time. So I was like, God, if there's just a way to sharpen where the platen, I was getting more support from the platen across the edge, the cutting edge, then I would feel a lot more comfortable sharpening on the machine. And I agree with you, Jeff. J-Flex is, even with a hard backing, is not ideal because it puckers away from the platen. And so you want something that's got at least like an X weight belt. So it's a little bit more flat. And so I started sharpening kind of with the edge vertical, along the length of the platen. That way the platen was supporting, instead of just 2 inches of the cutting edge, I'm supporting like 4 to 6 inches of the knife when I'm sharpening and holding the knife vertically. And it does, it's tricky because it's awkward and you're holding it in an unusual way. But it also, when you're, especially with the tip down, you can watch the angle in relationship of the cutting, or I guess the cross section of the blade to the platen. And you, if you look up a protractor online, like, you can get an idea as to what angle you're holding based on, like, if it's a half inch from the cutting edge and it's an eighth of an inch off the belt, then you're at about 10 to 15 degrees you're sharpening at. Now, I've been just kind of freehanding this, but I do want to, I don't like relying on freehanding. I would like to have a more precise process for this, and I'm still working on developing a thing that can be used with the flat platen for more consistent belt sharpening on the machine. But that's what I do, like, my commercial sharpening for with. But for my professional, like, my custom knives, I still start on the machine the same way, but I finish on stones. But fuck, it takes stone work down from being, like, anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour to, like, fucking 5 minutes. It's awesome. I love it. So, but I would suggest just taking your time. It's gonna take a little time and practice to get used to it, but, yeah, in this next year, I've talked about this, I think, the last couple of years. I have a bunch of jigs and things that I developed and made for myself for my knife making process. And I think I'm going to start working with people like Brian House to help get some of these things out into the world. But anyways, that's how I sharpen on my machine, and it's been great. And I sharpen everything from tiny little paring knives and scissors and up to, like, giant 12-inch chef knife slicers, especially those fucking stupid-ass brisket. I hate those brisket slicers. They're so dumb. They're, like, an inch wide and, like, 14 inches long. Keeping that edge straight across a 2-inch belt is a trick unless you are sharpening vertically and it's getting better support along more of the length of that knife at one point, at one time, I guess. So that's my take on it.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
How's your battery doing, Craig?
I am on, where am I? 37%.
Huh. Oh, that's not bad.
We got 2 more hours.
Oh, easy. Easy.
Oh, okay. Easy. I thought you were going to be like, I'm at 13 minutes, guys.
No. 37% left. We're good.
Nice.
So, yeah, we did mention Tormek briefly then. If you don't know what Tormek is, it's a wheel. It's water-cooled. So any gunk and stuff, it just takes around with it as well. It's really slow, so it doesn't generate heat. And they've got little sort of rails on them, so you can dial in your angles, and it's repeatable. I use them. Jeff uses them. A number of our listeners use them. They're really cool. So, yeah. Is it TormekUSA.com? Is that right, Jeff?
Tormek.com.
Tormek.com. Tormek. TormeK.com.
And one of our listeners is a professional knife sharpener, honed by Jones, and he only uses the Tormek. He goes to farmers markets and he brings a Tormek with him.
There we go. Okay, where are we?
Colorado Bruce.
Bruce, yes.
Colorado Bruce says, if at a knife show, which is worse for the vendor, for a potential customer to, one, show no interest in their product, or two, show interest but not buy anything? So you're at a knife show. Who is the customer you dislike the most? One that shows no interest, or one that shows interest but doesn't buy anything?
I mean, I don't do knife shows, never have done. But,
well, let's put you into alternative, Craig. You
know, role
put
play.
Your
okay,
pants so, on. Chickens away.
I've got a nice table now. I've got some lovely knives out on the table. Yeah.
Guy comes Mareko over just and just past. Like.
Mareko just walks past. Doesn't even look.
He doesn't
I'm
even
like,
look.
You bastard! I'm gritting my teeth. I'm thinking, you bastard. Meanwhile, Chatty Jeff comes over.
Hey guys, hey, do you make knives? I love knives. I've always loved knives.
Okay, Big Bird. Jeez.
Hey baby, I love these knives. When I'm eating chicken, I need to use my
I used to use my knives when I'm eating my chicken on my tarp.
So, yes, I do make knives. What are you looking for? What kind of thing are you after?
Looking for a... Well, I don't know if... I'm looking at your work, and I just don't know if you do it. It's kind of like a long chef's knife, and it's got a radius, a specific radius. I don't think that you make it. Maybe you do. Let's look around. Let's look around for what you make.
Fuck off, then.
Oh, well, I wasn't going to buy anything. Well, if that's the way you're going to be, that's the way you're going to talk to your customers, then I didn't even want to buy your knives anyway. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah, number two's worse. Number two's worse.
Yeah, I suppose it's that thing of sort of respect, isn't it, really? You know, if people are coming over and, you know, they're genuinely interested. And a lot of times, I'm sure you'll get people coming over and you know they're not going to buy, but they're just genuinely interested.
Let's do it again.
That's fine.
Let's do my thing again. I got too hostile. Okay, let's do my part again, okay?
Hey there, Big Bird. What's going on?
Oh, man. Wow, these knives are awesome. I really like what you're doing.
Thank you.
Can you tell me more about your knives?
Yeah, sure. So they're all made... You know, completely custom.
Wow.
We can make what people want. Really.
Wow.
What kind of thing is it you're after?
Oh, I do all this cooking, and I like cook with my protein, and I only use this, and I love that, and oh, this is great. You know, let's talk for another half an hour, and then I'll just basically tell you that my wife won't let me buy anything. Goodbye. Thank you. We had to compress that bit because I all of a sudden thought. I'm thinking to myself, we got the Magna Carta bit going on. So
you know, I think you're right, and it's a proper sales technique. It's qualifying your buyer. You know, making sure that they're there to buy, and if not, don't give them too much time, you know. So that's a good point, actually. You know, I don't know how you do that in the case of a knife show, but yeah, you want to sort of qualify them to see, you know, are you in the market for buy-in, and you know, the right person.
The number two, if somebody just walks past, you're at least saving the person time, right? Like, but if you're you're thinking of guys, I've had guys on the phone, I'll never forget when back in the day when we first started making these phone calls, you know, for a customer which sent an interest and we'd send, and Tony would have me call. I'm on the phone with this guy and he's talking about cooking and I only use carbon steel knives for my protein. And it got to the point where it took me 15 minutes to realize that this dude is not buying anything. He just wants to talk.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, I got so irritated and I called Tony. I'm like, dude, some of these guys are just looking for a friend. I don't have half an hour to, you know, just chat with some dude about knives. I don't care enough, you know?
Yeah.
And there wasn't going to convert him. And I could tell that he just wanted to chat. And it was very frustrating to the point where, I mean, that was 10 years ago. I remember it to this day. And just, I remember where I was when I was taking the call, and I remember how irritated I was that I wasted all this time with this person who was clearly not going to buy anything.
Yeah. I think some people just want to talk to people just to sort of clarify that they know what they're talking about. You know, it's like,
right.
Yeah, I'm on a level with you kind of thing, you know?
And I know stuff as well?
Yeah, they're just saying these words. You're just like, yeah, whatever, mate, you know?
Oh, what's the Rockwell? Oh, you don't say.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised. I'm surprised it is so... Hi.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, yeah?
It's tricky doing shows. And I actually, I used to get annoyed, especially by the person that was sitting there talking, but didn't end up buying anything. One, because I'd actually had lots of people that I'd either contact or who would reach out to me afterward, or I would see later who were like, I was interested in talking to you about you. Not like a actual potential customer. But you were in the middle of a conversation. I didn't want to interrupt. And I'm just like, God. So I think, especially knife makers, who I think most people listen to the show, or a lot of them listen to the show. If you're a knife maker, and even if you're a potential client, if you're standing at a table at a show talking to somebody about their work, but you're not going to be buying, if a potential customer comes up, be respectful and try to step aside and give that maker behind the table an opportunity to possibly make a sale. But what I started doing is just looking at it as reps, as getting opportunities to, and it sucks. Like, it's not necessarily the funnest thing.
But to hone kind of like your sales pitch, or not even your sales pitch, but just like to be able to talk about you and talk about your work in a meaningful way that connects to the people. And if I had one person in front of my table that I was initially talking to and then other people walk by, I would start engaging them too. And just like, just by looking at them, or maybe I would ask a question of them and just make it like a group conversation rather than just being locked into the one person. And the reality, especially the person that you're talking to, you know, you don't know who they know, or if they maybe are going to be looking for a gift for somebody down the road, or whatever. And so, you know, taking that opportunity to, since you're fucking there to talk to a person, do it. Like, that's what you're there to do. And yeah, I would take that opportunity just to, again, like, it could be a good opportunity to get a rep in for just talking to people. You know, that might translate into a sale down the road. You just don't know. So I think if you're going to take the time, you're going to spend the money to be there, fucking be there and do it. I just saw this great quote the other day is, if you can't get out of it, get into it. So that means, like, if you're stuck and you can't get out of doing something, fucking dig in and get the most out of it. Instead of sitting there and being like, fuck, I wish I wasn't here. Fuck, I wish I wasn't talking to this, that, or the other person. Dig in and make it worth the fucking time. That way you don't leave feeling like it was a fucking waste of time.
You could use that for the burnout question.
Sure.
You know? Yeah,
absolutely. I took that. When I saw it, I was like, yep, I could adapt this to my work days for sure.
I think that this goes back to the whole thing of what your reasoning behind going to these things are. And I think that it's for sure. I think, you know, we talk about, you know, we're making jokes about, you know, customers being dicks and stuff. But at the same time, I mean, I think you have to see everything like a long slog and not just this quick one. So if I were to go there, I would really try to not think about the money part and like the expectations of the money part. And I would just be there for, at the very least, PR of being able to talk to someone and then engage with people. And, you know, hopefully it translates over into sales, but without the expectation of like, this guy's wasting my time. You know, I think that we get to the point. I also believe that, and I know that we make a lot of jokes and I'm probably one of the worst of it. I think it gets to the point where we have this mindset of an adversarial relationship with customers. Sure. And I think that that's bad. I think that when we don't respect our customers and we don't respect potential customers, even though everybody's not going to be wonderful. I mean, you're going to get dicks and that's just the way it is. You know, look at Craig. I mean, he knows. You get dicks.
I sometimes get dicks.
He's sitting on his couch, and next thing you know, you're getting dicks. You never know. But I think that it's important to kind of reevaluate. Even, you know, we talk about, you know, the art and business are really oil and water, and we have to figure out a way in which to understand that sales is part of the business. It's a giant part. And public relations is a giant part of you being successful. And I told this story on Knife Talk on Full Blast last week, and it's a crazy story. It's like, there's this pizza guy near me who is phenomenal. This pizza is the most elite pizza in the area. I had it last night.
Wow.
This is legitimately, as far as elite pizza, it's like top of the line. But the guy's crazy. He fights people online. He says terrible things about other people's business. He is, you know, slightly crazy to his customers. He bans customers. He's very, like, he's doing everything he can to not do a wonderful job as PR. Well, but the funny thing is there might be some sort of mental issue where he realizes that no matter, it's like a very toxic relationship. Like, his pizza is so elite, people take it. You know, it's like the soup Nazi
it doesn't matter how shitty he is.
He's not totally shitty. Like, he can be shitty. And it's like hilarious because it's like his pizza, you know, it's almost like a representation of the person that he is because his pizza is so elite. It like forgives all of his bad behavior. And I feel as though that there are a lot of knife makers who are in the same boat where they're just like, I'm so good at this that I don't need to focus on my customer service, and you're here for me, and you know who I am, and I'm a special person, and you're going to use your money to validate my my existence. And I feel as though that that's a negative way to go about it. And I think that it doesn't work with everybody.
No.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Oh, and I have friends who do that.
Oh, I know. We know lots of people like that.
And I it's hard to not see it coming from a place of ego. And if you're not selling, or if you're at a show, like, you gotta try to remove some of that in a way, because I think it's not going to serve you well. And like, you can be sit here and be annoyed at these people, either one who are not even looking at your shit, or one who you perceive are wasting your time, or you can be thankful
right.
that person didn't just walk by because they're not fucking interested and didn't waste your time, or two, thankful that person that talked with you, even if they didn't buy something, you got a rep in for being able to like hone.
You're connecting.
You're connecting. You're honing your message. You don't know where that conversation could go later. I've actually had conversations with people translate into sales down the road. Somebody emails me randomly and like, oh, a friend of mine saw you at the show. They really liked your work. They had a great conversation with you, and that developing that connection, that level of trust, even in a very short period of time, just being knowledgeable and helpful and interactive with somebody goes a long fucking way in a world where we're as connected as fucking possible, but also at the same time don't know how to talk to each other. And so there is a little bit of a subtle art of communication around that can go a really long way for you. And so I think try to anybody who's going to a show, not just this person, but even my fucking friends who I know aren't necessarily listening right now, but try to remove that ego, because it's nobody's job but your own to pluck yourself out of obscurity and help make a sale.
But let's
and so those these things are going to help you by just talking to these people.
Let's also kind of like investigate the, you know, we it's easy to say the ego, take the ego out of it. But what is the psychological issue? The psychological issue isn't just the, you know, you're self-involved and you're a narcissist and all that stuff. It's more along the lines of most people are looking to be accepted, and that they want to express something that they've done, which is the physical manifestation of talent, skill, creativity, yeah. originality, hard work, dedication. And they're looking at this thing, and some of them are just like, I'm looking to be accepted, and this is how I'm going to be accepted.
Right.
And it's not necessarily the blanket statement of just the ego, but it comes from probably childhood. Probably like you weren't taken, you know, I feel the same way. The reason why I went into sculpture is because when I was a kid, I was a good looking kid. Listen, I was almost in Blue Lagoon too, ladies and gentlemen. I was
at
like,
least we forget. Yeah,
I would lest anyone forget. I was almost a C actor. I was
almost
like
child porn with Brooke Shields.
No, don't no. I would have done a makeout scene in the Fiji Islands with Mila Jovovich.
Oh, that's
Blue
right.
Lagoon 2.
Oh, that was
I'm not that old. Yeah. Not that old. Not that old. And I was.
Oh, you're mad good. At Brooke Shields? Sorry.
I'm just saying that was number one. No, it was going to yeah. be a number two. Okay? There's a time difference. Right. I'm being honest that's here. Right. Now, I when I was younger, my parents were very superficial. They thought that I was just going to get away with, you know, my good looks and all that stuff. And I wanted to be seen. I didn't want to be seen. I wanted to be heard based off of the things that I was doing. So doing art was the ability for me to, I have value besides how, you know, child, you know, as a good looking kid. So I think I was looking for acceptance in regards to I'm more valuable than just like being this young
not
teenage
just a pretty
stud.
Face.
Sit there and look pretty, Jeff.
Yeah. Totally. And then sculpture was that thing, because all of a sudden it was like I had something to say. People liked my sculpture, and I didn't have to be involved. It wasn't had nothing to do with my looks.
I want to be clear that I'm not speaking from a soapbox down at anybody. I'm talking from my own experience and my own struggle with ego around all of this shit and being at shows and not making any sales. Like I haven't made any sales at any knife shows I ever went to. It feels good. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean,
I just had to figure out a way to shift it in my mind so that I wasn't so fucking annoyed
about spending thousands of dollars traveling across the fucking country with nothing to show for it.
That's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
It's a kick in the fucking teeth.
I remember the first year I went to Blade Show, and I think I was standing with Charlie Lionheart, Charlie Ellis, and Jeremy Spake, and we were standing at the pit, and this guy comes over, and he was selling these nice little, bog standard, hunting knives, short hunting knives. And he had them laser jet cut, and I think he had them done and all done, and he brought a pile of them. And he was selling for, I think I remember they were like $125, $135. And I remember he had a pile of them. And we were talking to him, so this is now Saturday night, and we said, how's it going? We just started talking to him. He said, how's it going? And he goes, not good. And we're like, why not? He's like, well, I got here. It cost me this, cost me that, cost me this, cost me that. And then Friday, nobody bought anything. And then today, I bought a couple sales. Meanwhile, I paid $500 for the table. I bought the airlines. Yeah. Da, 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 da. And the dude was like, and I was just like, I was pulling for him. Like, I pulling for him because the dude was sweating. He was white, pale. Like, this dude was like, this is about to be a fucking wreck. And Sunday, shit's going south. Sunday, people are like leaving and they're looking for a deal. I felt so bad for this dude. And that's it. That's the end of the story. But it's like, I can only imagine that what a kick in the balls
is. Did you buy one of his knives?
Fuck no. I'm not buying knives. I'm not checking package. you're right. I should have. Son of a bitch. I mean, I'm not checking a knife. I'm not checking a bag to go home. Yeah. You made a good point there, Mareko. I fucked up.
You could have made his life so much better.
I could have been like, you know what, kid? Here's $150. and instead of like, oh, this is so terrible. I feel so bad for him. Oh, fuck him.
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah, fuck you, dog. You're on your own, dog. Just kidding. Just kidding.
But you know what? To be more financially secure, rather than spend money, you could save money. We can help you. We can help you with that. If you head on over to TexasFireSupply.com, have a look at all the stuff that they sell, which is it includes Indasa Rhino-Wet, because if you're hand sanding, you need to be using Indasa Rhino-Wet, let's face it. Anything that they sell there, you get 10% off with Knife Talk 10 at checkout. So that's TexasFireSupply.com. Go check it out and make sure you fill up that basket with your Indasa Rhino-Wet.
And you know what you also got to do?
What's
when
that?
You're sitting on that couch eating your chicken, and you got your glasses off, you got nothing else on but your pants. If you got to get it hard,
I didn't say I had my pants on. Didn't say that.
If you want to get it hard, you got to use an even heat, ladies and gentlemen. If you need to heat treat your knives, your hammers, all that stuff, you got to do it right. You got to use an even heat. Okay, evenheat-kiln.com.
There you go. There we go. Okay, what we got? Should we do a couple more questions, or have we got any feedback or anything?
We have feedback if you want. Guys, if you want to go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can send us your feedback. We have some feedback from Rena. Rena is, I had to get this off of the Knife Talk website. This is our only female audience member, Rena, at Rena. Hi, Knife Talk. First of all, this message is from my wife's account, so don't worry. Oh, never mind. So it's the husband. But don't worry, I don't make her listen to the podcast. Thanks for the weekly knife entertainment. A long time ago, someone mentioned that they had an issue with the kiln cooling down. I have a brick of Shamot. Shamot in my DIY kiln that helps, and I have a bucket of ashes that I put in the knives and heat everything up to 650 degrees Celsius. Then I take the knives out of the ashes, cheap alternative to vermiculite. The knives stay quite hot, and then the oven can go up to the target temperature. I don't want the knives to be. I don't want the knives to heat up all the way with the oven to keep austenizing as short as possible. Keep up the great work. Insert dick joke here, Rudy. So I don't understand one think of that.
No, I don't quite understand.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I thought all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh God, we have a female listener named Marina. Turns out it was her husband, and I don't know what he was talking about. So I apologize. Let's go with Michael Black says that Dick Do belly bit got me laughing so hard I almost crashed the car. So last week we did a little, when you left, we did some weird news.
Oh, okay.
And we talked about, you know what Dick Do is?
No.
Dick Do is when your stomach sticks out farther than your Dick Do. Okay. You know what I'm saying? We were talking about barbecue guys.
Okay.
And we were just talking about how I noticed that barbecue guys like to have their aprons extremely tight. And then they, I don't know what that's all about. And they have the string that's holding on for dear life and the Dick Do showing up. And Greg didn't know what Dick Do was. Fox River Blade says, guys, I'm listening to the most recent episode about Dick Do's and briskets while rough grinding. And I was laughing so hard that tears fucked up my vision and I had to stop running my machine. That was hilarious. Nice. So we killed him last
week. We did. We're stopping him. Production. That's good.
Nice.
That's good. Yeah, we killed him. So this is from Ronald Handmade in regards to Australian Post. The situation with Australian Post is temporary. They'll start shipping United States soon. The biggest issue with the tariffs wasn't the end of the de minimis exemption. It was the fact that the president decided that all tariffs had to be paid by the sender before the goods arrived at the border or they would be sent back. Despite there being no system to process those payments, it's different to the way tariffs are collected everywhere else. The U.S. government have not... Yeah, so that's one of the things. I'm not going to go into it. Basically, he's saying that we were talking about the Australian Post temporarily not sending United States. Yeah, the tariff needs to be collected before the items are shipped.
Right. Okay.
That's crazy.
It's tough. I actually ordered something to fix my sister's car, and then I got a note from UPS saying the tariffs must be paid before it arrives. And I was shocked. I was like, I'd never seen this before. So,
Tough. Yeah. Well, look, I'm going to tell everybody all about maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is a good dude. They've got everything that we ever mention on the show. He's always going to have it in stock. So whatever you need, whether it's handle materials, abrasives, even tools, he's got it all. maritimeknifesupply.com. Go check it out. And it's also Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram. Definitely worth a follow because he's always sort of demonstrating the stuff that he's got there. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
And then that's about it, right? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, let's have a look. I've got 12% of battery left. Let's keep going.
Oh, God. Let's
keep going till we're flat. Question from Sugarfree92. I do stock removal, but would like to start trying bolsters. Would brazing be my best option, or is it a preference type of thing? Cheers, fellas.
What do you think, Rocco?
In the past, I have actually just pinned on bolsters. So you drill holes into your blade stock, and then you transfer those holes to whatever your bolster material is. And then I usually use one bolster then to transfer holes to the other bolster and get them cleaned up and matching up really nicely and then pin them into place usually with the same stock. So I've done copper, bronze, brass in the past, and all of them you can get pin stock for. So yeah, that would be my move. But I guess you can do brazed on. I've just never done it myself. Or I guess, silver soldered. I don't know how the fuck.
Yeah, me neither. I've never done the brazing. No, I've never done the brazing on, so. Yeah, I like that. Most people do the pin stuff, right?
I think most people do the pinned on bolsters.
Is that because it'll make it an easier transition to whatever the material is that's going below the bolster? I'm assuming this is obviously a full tang knife. So I'm thinking that the transition would make it easier. Otherwise, you're going to get a little bit of, you don't want to get a little foolishness on that break of that 90 degree from the end of the bolster to the tang.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's got to be
otherwise.
It's, yeah, it's fixed with two pins. So it won't, yeah, yeah, it makes sense.
So you can have a real tight connection with the... actually, when I do bolsters, when I do a different colored bolster, I'll usually use G10, and then I'll create the handle. I'll cut a piece of black G10 that's like an inch and a half by two, and then I'll cut all the rest of them. I'll glue them all together, and then I'll make it the entire scale, and then I'll focus the whole thing. But there's like a liner behind it, so I know that the machining is tight, and I'm not dealing with the brass bolster. I'm not doing a brass bolster. I'm doing like a G10 bolster, but I'm like, that's part of the lamination process because I want to make sure that that connection between the bolster and what's below the bolster is a nice tight fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what would be nice? Dharma steel bolsters.
Oh man, that's a great idea.
Imagine that.
Can you imagine?
Tell us about Dharma steel, Jeff.
Oh baby, the best pattern welded steel. The Dharma steel people are our friends. Carly and everybody do a great job making this beautiful stainless Damascus. Easy to work with, easy to heat treat. Makes beautiful stainless steel Damascus pattern welded steel knives. And if you go to damasteel.se, you can see what the fuss is about. And then you put in the promo code Knife Talk. Knife Talk 10? Knife Talk? One of them two. You get 10% off.
Yeah.
You get 10% off. And the Damasteel Invitational is coming up. And if you want to get your Damasteel build along stuff, go to, what was it again, Mareko?
AMX, so American Metal Exchange.
They have the bolt. They have the stuff. If you're in the United States or if you're in Canada, you can go to Maritime Knife Supply. Or if you're in Europe, you can go straight to Europe and the EU. You can go straight to damasteel.se.
Yeah, yeah. And just to be clear, Carly isn't making the Damasteel. She's just in the office listening to podcasts all day.
Hey, whoa,
She doesn't do much. She listens to podcasts. That's it.
Carly's great. Carly's actually going to come on the Full Blast podcast. We have been having some conversations.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she wants to talk sport. She wants to talk sports. So we're going to talk sports. We're going to do an all sports show, me and Carly.
Nice. The old sports show.
It's going to be all. I'm going to tell you this about Carly. She knows a lot about basketball. It's shocking, frankly, how much she knows about basketball. So we're going to do a basketball episode.
Special.
Nice. Special.
Mareko, do you want to pick one last question?
Let's just take this next one from Devin Sheridan. He says, if doing an S grind, do you do it on both sides of the knife or only one side, depending on what hand you hold the knife with? Devin, you can do it on either side or just one side. I typically do a bilateral grind, so that means it's on both sides. And that way, I like the idea that my knives can be used by either a left-handed user or a right-handed user. When you start doing things, or especially grinds, asymmetrically, they perform preferentially to a certain-handed person, whether that's right or left-handed. And there are a lot of, and you can get a lot of good performance out of a knife by grinding an asymmetrical S grind or any other kind of complex or compound grind, but the problem is it's only good for that handed person. So if it's ground for a right handed user, then it's only good for a right handed person. I try to do it my S grinds or my compound grinds I can't even think of the word now. Both-handed.
Ambidextrous.
Yeah. Ambidextrous. Yeah.
So this is probably a really basic question, but I think it's worth asking. So if you'd only do it on one side, the S grind, I'm assuming, would be on the waist side, if you like. So let's say you're right-handed and you're cutting, let's say, a tomato or a cucumber.
Yep.
So you've got the food is the material, right? You hold it in your left hand. You're cutting, so which side of the blade is going to have the S grind? Is it the right side, which is going to be almost like the food release side, or is it going to be the cutting side, I suppose, on the left?
It would be...
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if you're a right-handed user, you're holding the food with your left, you're cutting the food shedding off on the right. The right side, at least the way I would make it, is that the right side would have the hollow or the compound grind to benefit.
So it's the waist, like the waist side. Yeah. It's not the waist, but as if you're cutting with a tool. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and that's
doing that kind of a grind is more geared towards the benefit or looking for the benefit of food release. But when it comes to cutting, the left side of the blade usually doesn't have any kind of compound grind, or maybe it's a very subtle convex grind. You're going to have more food engagement there, and that's going to create friction. And the biggest benefit isn't necessarily actually the food release. The biggest benefit of the S grind is the reduction of cut friction. So the more easily the knife cuts through food, because that surface tension is kind of broken once you hit that hollow, and it allows the knife to fall through food much more easily.
Not as easy as the ultrasonic knife that everyone's sending me, and I'm so goddamn sick of seeing.
That fucking guy lives in Seattle. He's up in Seattle. I'd be curious to go. I saw some videos of that knife being used. I would be curious to use it myself, but
it's a
bit gimmicky, and it's only like fucking $300 knife.
The PR. All right, so just real quick, because I know we got to get out of here. I should have brought it up earlier. Everybody and their mother sent me this ultrasonic knife that's coming out, and the dude who's cut, you know, it's just like, I mean, it's like one of them toothbrushes that, like, whatchamacallit, you know, vibrates, or I don't know what the hell. You're basically a vibrator, honestly. And so I guess the PR company that represents them sent me a message and all that, and I just got flooded with all these.
You should have got one.
Why? What do you mean? I should have bought one? For what?
No. Is the PR company trying to get you to promote it?
No, they're just wanting me to see. You know what? Even if they offered me one, I wouldn't be interested. I don't need more shit. I don't need more junk. Like, I need less stuff in my life. But it's like, everybody's like, well, what do you think? What do you think? What do I think? I mean, they've been made those electric slicers forever. All this shit, it's just different stuff. This is going to revolutionize the world.
It's like the shake weight of the knife world.
Yeah. It totally, 100%. This is silly. You know, the older I get, the more I realize that people are just trying to reinvent the wheel in dumber and dumber ways. You know, it's period. It's Rube Goldberg shit. You know, I don't have no interests. We'll talk about a bit later next week. P.S. While you were talking, Carly from Damasio was trolling me about the Yankees.
Oh, nice.
She was, so fine.
All sport, all the time.
Carly must have been listening because all of a sudden she goes, good luck. Today's the last day of the regular season in Major League Baseball, and the Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays, because she's from Canada. I think she's from Toronto. This is a big deal. Today's a big deal. So I think that she's trolling me about the Yankees and the Blue Jays. So God bless some Damasteel. God bless Carly. God bless our listeners. And let's get the fuck out of here.
Yes. Let's do that. Right. Thank you all for listening. Speak to you all soon. Bye.